Morning, everybody. Thank you very much for coming. This is just to give you an update on the work of the bishops over the last few days. Obviously, for us, quite a highlight of these days was the Episcopal ordination of Monsignor Marcus Stock in the cathedral in Leeds, and the very warm welcome that he's been given in that diocese as its new bishop. So I think it was a very special occasion. It's a very special moment, and the start of something new for the Diocese of Leeds and its rich history. And I look forward certainly to seeing Bishop Marcus flourish there, as I'm sure he will. So while as a bishop's conference we rejoiced in seeing him ordained a bishop and having him as one of the members of the Bishops' Conference, we were very conscious of losing an excellent General Secretary, and therefore pleased to welcome Chris Father. You're still Father?
I'm still
the Father. Good. Long may that last. Father Christopher Thomas, who is from Nottingham Diocese, and therefore I thank at the time the first initiative was Bishop Malcolm then, so I thank him, and I thank Monsignor Tom McGovern, the administrator of Nottingham Diocese, for releasing Chris for this next 5-year period as General Secretary of the Bishops' Conference. So Chris, if you want to let them hear your voice and say a few things, you're very welcome.
Thank you very much, Your Eminence. I was delighted to be asked to serve the Church in this role, It's been a little bit of a baptism of fire because Father Monsignor Marcus and myself have sort of planned an induction period and various other things. But if you want to make God laugh, always tell him your plans. And with the appointment of Monsignor Stock as the Bishop of Leeds, things move forward. So whereas I was supposed to be an observer last week at the Bishop's plenary meeting, I ended up sitting at the Cardinal's side and advising him through the meeting, which was a great privilege. And it was lovely to see the bishops together. And I want to thank Bishop Marcus for the kindness that he's shown me over the last few weeks, and all the staff here at the Secretariat who have welcomed me wholeheartedly into their midst to begin this important work. But I'm not the only person beginning at this time. We were very delighted last week to have with us Father George Bowen, who is a priest of the Congregation of the Oratory, who has been appointed the Departmental Secretary for Education and Formation. And that was Father George's first plenary meeting as well. And also, as you will receive from the press release, Canon John O'Toole, who is currently the Dean of St George's Cathedral in Southwark, will be joining us in January to work as the National Ecumenical Officer and the Department for Christian Union, Dialogue and Unity. He will work as the Departmental Secretary for that as well. So there's a little bit of change in the Secretariat, but the work remains the same. Our core work is to proclaim the gospel in this country effectively and to work at the service of the bishops for the pastoral work that they determine from their dioceses.
Thank you, Chris. And Canon John is here if anybody wants to chat to him later. A major item on our discussion, which we took in a few stages, was how best to use the period in between the two synods on the family. We were very anxious to respond constructively to the invitation of Pope Francis, and to do so in the tones that Pope Francis has established. And those of you who followed the synod will remember his very remarkable address to the synod members on the day of its last meeting. And as I've said already, to me that was one of the most remarkable papal addresses I've ever heard. And he opened our eyes and hearts to understand quite systematically that what we were engaged in was not so much a debate. This was not a debating chamber. It was not an exploration of conflicting views, but it was an attempt to discern. And he used all the riches of his Ignatian background and the ability of someone finely tuned to discerning the Spirit of God to help us to see where we were being led and where we were being distracted. by what he described as the five temptations that we face. So what we want to do very much is to take that spirit as the defining spirit of our reflection over the next 9 or 10 months. And we want to do this in two particular ways, in two particular directions, which are outlined briefly for you in that first of the resolutions on the page that you have. So we're looking to establish, hopefully in every parish and smaller groups if they wish, a period of spiritual reflection on the themes of the vocation, journey and mission of the family. And we're happy that people will respond to that invitation, share their reflections, and in that sense assist our delegates at the October 2015 Synod. We voted for those two delegates, and they will be Bishop Peter Doyle, who has overall responsibility for the work of marriage and family life on behalf of the Bishops' Conference, and myself, I think, as an important continuity between the two synods. We are at the present preparing this material for the, and I think it's an important phrase, for the spiritual reflection, because what we're looking for is to understand more deeply from people how God is present in their lives through all the challenges, the difficulties that they face. So it's not so much a request for opinion as a request for testimony, and testimony about how in the patterns of daily living people sense and are supported by and encouraged in the presence of God and the work of the Holy Spirit in their lives. You will recall that the two great features and therefore the tension in the Synod in October was, on the one hand, for it to give a resounding trumpet call in support of marriage and stability of family life, and on the other hand, express and strengthen the pastoral response of the church to people in a wide, wide variety of difficult and pressurized situations. And so we hope that the material we prepare will find that same balance as well. And then secondly, as you, again you can see on the sheet, we wanted to turn to those whose daily bread is the pastoral care of people, whose day-to-day work is the accompaniment of this pilgrimage of faith. And so we're going to fashion something for the clergy of every diocese, and no doubt for others who share in a pastoral ministry, on the principles and practice of pastoral care and accompaniment. You will notice in that little resolution the word anew, to reflect anew, because I must admit that in the deliberations of the Synod, I don't think there were new things being said. I think there are things well embedded in the tradition of the Church which need to be brought to the surface again. And so that will be the invitation to the clergy to reflect on these things and tell us how they see it. And that will obviously, therefore, include some of the key pastoral challenges that they, as priests, day by day, encounter and try and respond to as positively as possible. So we hope that this will be, the material will be ready for use after Christmas. And then that gives us the period from, you know, late December through to June or July for this to take place, so that it then can be looked at and gathered together before the next Synod in October. Okay. You see the next resolution there. We put together a publication about the general election. A letter it is. But we're not releasing that now. It's too soon, and there will be some fine-tuning to do as we get nearer to the time. I think we're thinking of this February, March, something around about that time. But the basic text is ready, but it's not in any sense yet in a final form. I think another very important contribution we had at our meeting was from the Ukrainian bishop, Bishop Kleb. And he's just given me just some simple notes, because he expressed to us with great clarity and obviously a real depth of feeling the situation in his home country, or in the country of his church, of the Ukraine. He asked for our prayers. So I said, well, what's the best day for us to be praying for you? And he said, the Feast of St. Josaphat, and it's today. So we expressed very sincere prayers to the Lord on that Feast of St. Josaphat, which was Wednesday, for the church in Ukraine. So this is the kind of points that he was making. It's now the ninth month in which there is virtually an undeclared war in the east of Ukraine. It's waged by Russian-backed separatists with Russian regular troops against the Ukrainian government. But the real victim, he says, is the civilian population. According to the latest news, Russian troops and weaponry are continuously crossing the border into the Ukraine. He said, secondly, that the country is on the verge of a humanitarian catastrophe. People's lives are shattered, their homes destroyed, infrastructures damaged. There are thousands of casualties and many more injured, some crippled for life. He said, thirdly, within this, the church is certainly being targeted. A bishop's home and his possessions were taken over by the rebels. Sisters' convents, priests have been arrested, detained and tortured. His fourth point was that the UK and European community reactions are slow and, in his view, ineffective at stopping this Russian aggression. He said even the shooting down of MH17, the victims of which were also UK citizens, he feels has been put to one side. He feels strongly that the Ukraine needs help today, more than words and promises. He is fearful, as many others have expressed, that this escalation of violence in the Ukraine could eventually have very serious consequences for all of Europe, not excluding the UK. So they're his words, and I'm very happy to relay them to you. I think we also looked, as you would have expected, at the situation in the Middle East. I was part of the consistory of bishops held on the 20th of October in the Holy See, in which Cardinal Parolin, Secretary of State, gave a very comprehensive overview from the Holy See's point of view of the situation in Syria and Iraq and in Palestine and Israel. To concentrate on Palestine and Israel, on Monday, Bishop Declan goes to Jerusalem as a precursor for what we call the coordination group of bishops who visit the Holy Land every year in January, bringing together leading bishops from six or seven different countries. And that is always done on behalf of the Holy See. For 20 years, we have been the coordinator, the coordinating bishops' conference for those visits. And Bishop Declan goes there on Monday to prepare some of that ground, to be meeting officials from the Israeli Foreign Ministry and other contacts in preparation for that. On Monday, I'm going to the Holy Land with 100 pilgrims from the Diocese of Westminster, plus another 30, I think, young people who are going in an interlinked pilgrimage. We're not doing exactly the same pilgrimage, but the two groups meet up every now and then so that we know, as it were, we're there as the church in Westminster Diocese. I'll be taking the young people to the Holocaust Memorial, and that's a very important moment for us. And then I and just a few people hope to travel on Sunday next to Gaza to celebrate Mass with a very small Catholic community in Gaza City, and to see for myself some of the circumstances and the conditions in which the people of Gaza are living at this time. Fifthly, we also had reports and a little discussion, it was more reports than discussion, on our work against human trafficking. You will recall last April, there was a major meeting of police chiefs, leaders of women religious orders and bishops in Rome on this topic, at the end of which all present signed, all the police chiefs present, signed up to an undertaking to seek further collaboration in this work, and that became known as the Santa Marta Group, because that's where we were staying. This group meets again on the 5th and 6th of December here in London. Now, I would like to take this opportunity today to congratulate Mr. Kevin Hyland, who I think yesterday was appointed as the new government's anti-slavery commissioner. Previously, Kevin Hyland worked in the Metropolitan Police and was the main instigator of a lot of the very effective collaboration and the building up a mutual trust between religious women, particularly here in London, and the Metropolitan Police in their cooperative collaborative efforts to rescue and then to assist and nurture people who for many years have been held in a virtual slavery. That is the continuing focus of the work of this group. In December, people will gather at the invitation of the Home Secretary, the Metropolitan Police Commissioner and myself. And they will be coming from over 25 different countries, from, for example, Nigeria, from Thailand, from Argentina, and that's the leaders of the police forces in those lands. There's also in the meeting a strong presence of religious women, because it's their work which is so essential in this arena, and also bishops who will help to foster and strengthen these practical relationships in favour of those who have been trafficked. There is also an ambassadorial strand to this meeting, so that there is a kind of international political dimension to it as well. So this meeting, 5th and 6th of December, is very important. It's a focus of one of the real points of practical cooperation being fostered by the Catholic Church worldwide and police forces worldwide working together with religious women. We're very conscious that a lot of good work goes on in support of people who have been trafficked in other initiatives up and down this country, often involving religious women indeed. What is specific about this is it brings to the fore both the current level of cooperation between the church and the police forces and the huge potential of that cooperation to make the response to the crime against humanity of human trafficking a little bit more effective. And then just two more things to mention. You have received again in the resolutions of the Bishops' Conference the last statement on the page, which is about religious education at GCSE level. There's been a period of negotiation between certainly the Catholic community and other religious bodies and the government over its proposed alterations of some of the arrangements for GCSE subjects of RE. And a consultation was launched, I think, last Friday. And what is important is that the proposals on which this consultation is taking place do have the support of the Catholic Education Service and were given the support of every bishop at our conference this week. The statement there indicates that and indicates some of the reasons, and you also have a longer statement that was put out last Friday, the day I think that the consultation was launched, including a fuller statement there from Archbishop Malcolm McMahon as chairman of the Catholic Education Service. So those two statements, thank you, those two statements explain a bit about the potential that we see in the new arrangements that have been put out for consultation and therefore the reasons for our support for it. And then finally, there is, I hope, a very encouraging statement about the year of consecrated life, which begins in a couple of weeks' time on the first Sunday of Advent, or 3 weeks' time, and concludes in February 2016. This statement obviously has behind it a huge history of the massive contribution of religious women to Catholic life and to education in this country, and going from this country to many, many parts of the world. And what we're looking for during this year is a celebration of that, great support for religious women in this country as they come to a different phase in their history, and an encouragement for prayers and an increase of vocations to the consecrated life. You have, or it's available to you, a DVD that we've produced to illustrate the importance of this year and to cover the different strands of religious life, the apostolic communities, the enclosed communities, those in active orders who are under religious vows, and then an explanation by Timothy Radcliffe of why it's such a good thing to be part of religious life as a joyful and spirited adventure.